And Mobile Loaves and Fish was founded over 27 years ago. 10 years ago, they started a village called Community First Village in Austin. They've lifted over 450 chronically homeless individuals off the street and given them the supportive services they need to transform their lives. They're now expanding, and they'll be able to house up to, I think, right at 2,000. So it's a huge success. They've been on 60 Minutes, the Today Show, and the founder was interviewed on Joe Rogan. They've been in the New York Times and that kind of thing. So we've known Alan for 12, 15 years, and we've got a very good friend that serves on their board. And so when this lady said that she wanted to donate this land to do something beautiful with, we decided to ask her if she wanted to go take a look at Community First as a possibility, and which we did. She decided that's what she wanted to happen on her 73 acres, which is her homestead where she grew up, and it's a gorgeous piece of land in Denton. And so modeling after Community First Village, which, you know, we have a relationship there, would have been the idea. And our benefactor said she wanted to do that. She had no idea how to do that, how to get it started. And as a serial entrepreneur that, you know, maybe's lost my mind a time or two, I volunteered to spearhead a search committee to find the team to make it happen. I tell everybody that was at lunch in Austin when we took her down to see Community First Village, and that's where God tricked me into it. I say that jokingly. It's a blessing to be able to serve. But that's kind of how it came together. She donated the 73 acres. She wants the village to be on the 73 acres. Subsequent to that, she donated an additional 200 acres, stated it could be used, however, as a funding mechanism or for additional village or what have you. So we've got a good bit of land, and we're working on a plan development that we're trying to get approved through the city of Denton right now to construct the village on the 70 acre.
So right now, those 73 acres are just nothing on it. Is it in, can you give us the approximate location or whereabouts in Denton County is it?
Yeah, it's up in the northwest part of the city. It's one of the newer annexed pieces of dirt in the city of Denton, near 288 and 35, just west of 35. And, so there, as I mentioned, it's her homestead. So there's a couple of homes on the property, and there's several barns.
Okay.
And her family were farmers. The name of our organization is the 1877 Journey. That's the 501c3 that we've gotten approved. We're a nonprofit. And the reason we named it the 1877 Journey is her family started buying land in Denton in 1877. Mm. So we feel like the journey started in 1877 and continues with this mission.
The website for Community Forever Village is communityforever.org. My guest, president, CEO, founder, Pete Moggins. And so where are you now? You've got the land, and obviously this is a huge undertaking, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
You got to get a lot of people involved. And so what's going on right now as we speak?
Yeah, so what we need is a plan development, which is going to require a zoning change on the 73 acres. And we've been working with the city. It's been quite some time now, but we've got a lot of challenges up in that area with utilities. You know, when a developer comes in, and I'm not a developer by trade, I'm willing to try anything once, and I've hired consultants to come in alongside me that are developers to guide me through or help guide us as a board through the process. So we've been working on that for a number of years. There are a number of challenges in the area, just, you know, making it, whether it's feasible or not, to construct. And that's mostly utilities, water, wastewater, and these kind of things. So we've been working on solutions for that, and then we're back and forth with the city on what the rules will be for the plan development, you know, what we can build, how we can build, and, you know, to what standards of construction and all these kind of things. So we're working through that. I feel like we're getting very close on that. I think we're within, you know, 3 to 6 months of getting approval on that, and then we'll move forward with actual civil engineering so that we can get underway with construction, and that'd probably be within the next year to year and a half.
The good thing, I guess, about this is that you do have a model. You're not just blindly doing this.
Correct.
Community First Village, is that pretty much a replication of what you would like, or are there some things that you'd say, well, yeah, I want to do this, but I think I'll do it a little bit differently? Is that a pretty much you want to do it exactly how they're doing, or how close would it look to that?
Well, yeah, we want to replicate Community First, but I think, you know, Alan Graham and the leadership at Community First would tell you that they're you know, a work in progress as they go. I mean, as God leads them, they take new direction even today. And so there are things that they're learning, but certainly there's a lot that they have learned that we can learn from, that we don't want to do, things that we do want to do. And there's some things that we might want to do a little bit differently, you know, just because it's Denton and it's not Austin, the weather's a little bit different and that kind of thing. But we do want to model after Community First. It's different, you know, as you and I have talked about, it's different than what most people may envision when they think about initiatives that are taking place in the homelessness space. You know, when you talk about bringing people off the street into housing, that conjures up thoughts for a lot of people that I talk to of homelessness shelters like they see downtown, where there's, you know, maybe it doesn't look in the best condition and there's, you know, loitering out front and these kind of things. It's not that at all. Community First Village has proven to be transformative. Okay, so the first chronically homeless individual that ever moved into Community First Village still lives there. So it's not temporary housing to transition back into you know, normal society, or however you want to term that, how people might term that. This is for individuals that you know, frankly, they are struggling with, you know, trauma issues, or you know, they may have mental issues, drug addiction. There's different, you know, reasons why they might be chronically homeless and living on the street. If someone is chronically homeless, that means they've been on the street for at least 12 months. And just living on the street for 12 months, my understanding is the trauma that causes really leaves you in a condition where it's difficult without some help to pick yourself up by your own bootstraps and just make life happen, you know, because you've got potentially cognitive disabilities and, you know, these kind of things where keeping a budget and paying rent and keeping a job, holding it down, all those kind of things become a significant challenge without significant help, right? So the village surrounds these individuals, our chronically homeless neighbors, with the supportive services that they need, medical facilities, counseling facilities, addiction recovery, you know, grocery store and everything else. It'll be, for lack of a better way of putting it, all-inclusive village for them to live, and it's permanent housing. People that have experienced trauma, part of the trauma they experience is constant displacement. If you find yourself homeless, you're sleeping on a curb one night, you get kicked off that, you're under a bridge the next night, you're on the front step of a business the next, and you're constantly being displaced, which causes trauma. So it's permanent housing because it needs to be for our chronically homeless neighbors to understand that they're being loved back into a way of life, not just, you know, passed from one situation to another. But, you know, I do ramble, as we talked about before we got started, but you'd ask me about Community First. We do want to replicate Community First as closely as possible with some improvements where we see, you know, that improvements can be made, and they constantly tell us that kind of thing as well. I will say that, you know, in my vision, when you look at the homelessness space, there's kind of four different categories. And there are a lot of homelessness initiatives that operate in one of these categories without going into the next. So the first category, as I see it, is life-saving. And you got to realize that our neighbors that are experiencing homelessness, if they're living on the street, they're in mortal danger. So you know, the life expectancy of our neighbors that are experiencing homelessness is not good. It's a very dangerous situation for them. So the first, you know, kind of thing that needs to happen is life-saving. Pull them out of a dangerous situation and get them into housing. The second element—
Can you mind if I ask a follow-up question on that? Is there any kind of study about how willing these folks are to be displaced? Because I think, you know, it's not like, hey, you want to go to this community? I can imagine some of them just saying, for whatever reason, maybe due to mental illness, no, I don't want to go. Do most of them say, oh, yes, thank you, I want to get out of here? How willing are most people to to be taken from where they are into something even that's objectively speaking a better lifestyle?
Well, when you say how willing, you know, or is there a study? I'm not aware of a study.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not
anecdotally, maybe.
I will say there are some that are resistant to it. I mean, I have interviewed quite a number of missionals that live in Community First Village. And the missionals are people that are not formally homeless, but have chosen to live a sacrificial life and live in the village to minister to the formerly chronically homeless individuals that live there. So I've interviewed a number of those, and there are individuals living on the streets. Our neighbors that are living on the streets that are resistant to help because they're, you know, this fear of displacement and, you know, concern of incarceration, and they become, you know, kind of jaded, and they fear authority and these kind of things. So there's some of that. I don't know how widespread that is, but it is a situation where, you know, we have to approach these individuals in a ministry capacity where we let them know they're not being judged, there's nothing to fear, that we love them and we want to help them.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that was number one. And then, what are the other ones?
So secondly is, life sustaining. So if you sustain life, and this would be like government housing or some other form of affordable housing where they're in a place, with a roof over their head for a sustained period of time. So they're off the street, they're out of that place of danger. So their life's been saved. And then, you know, their life can be sustained over a period of time by staying in a safe place. And then the third area of service is life empowerment. And these are organizations that, you know, may give job training and are, you know, home economics type training and education of all sorts for people to be able to empower their lives. These neighbors of ours that are chronically homeless, to be able to empower their lives to, you know, improve themselves, get a better job or these kind of things, or to get a job in the first place. And then the fourth area is life transformation. And so I see us crossing all four of these categories. I mean, it is important that we get these individuals that are in danger of their life off the street into a place of safety, sustain them with permanent housing so they have a roof over their head ongoing. We want to provide the supportive services where we give them dignified work opportunities for a job, even in the village, or job training and what have you, to be able to get a job outside the village. But mostly we want to create an environment within the village that is not chaotic. It is peaceful and loving, and it is an environment that invites the Holy Spirit in to transform lives so that these individuals, that our neighbors that are experiencing homelessness, that need the love of Christ, as we know, we can love them into that. We don't want to preach them into it. We want to love them just through love and not being judgmental on what decisions they may or may not have made over their life, not judging how they got in the situation that they got in, just realizing that we have a neighbor that's in desperate need. And because Christ has called us to do so, we want to love that individual, and we want to, through the power of the Holy Spirit, express the love of Christ in the way that we minister to them, not in the way that we talk or preach to them, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So this environment that we want to create in the village, not only would it have medical facilities and counseling and addiction recovery and all the rest of it, it would have a huge spiritual component so that these individuals could find relationship with God and begin to walk with Christ. And when you, there's a lot of studies that show that volunteering, say, just on a, you know, on a secular level, volunteering actually helps raise the mood and, you know, improves your kind of your self-satisfaction, say, your self is improved.
You dignity have more, or?
Yeah, well, higher dignity, and you have, I can't think of the word that I'm looking for, but in volunteering and giving back, there's evidence that improves your self-esteem. So maybe self-esteem is what I'm looking for. Well, the reality is that we know that if you come to relationship with Christ and begin to walk with Christ and then start to give back, that's just multiplied.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's life transformation that takes place. And what's happened at Community First Village is individuals have started giving back. The first individual that moved into Community First still lives there. And he now volunteers and gives back to the others that are coming into the village that need help. And so that life transformation for him has been overwhelming, you know, if you speak to him about that.
Pete Moggins is my guest, president, CEO, founder of Community Forever Village. And the website, communityforever.org, communityforever.org, Christian ministry serving the chronically homeless in Denton County with permanent housing and supportive services that allow them to reclaim their dignity and live with purpose. Now, I can see some people saying, Pete, I think these people that live there ought to have a little skin in the game. Are they going to be giving any kind of financial contribution? It doesn't sound like what you're saying, that this is a let's rehab them and then get them out into the real world.
Right.
So to speak.
Right.
This is, and you gave the example about the guy who the first person is still there. And so this is permanent housing.
Yes.
And then, is there any obligation among these people? Obviously to live according to some kind of rule of law and community.
Yes.
But what else is expected of them?
Yeah. There's rules. It's kind of like a homeowners association on steroids. I mean, there'd be some rules in there that you wouldn't normally have in a homeowners set of rules, like don't put your hands on staff or each other and these kind of things. But I just lost my train of thought.
Yeah. So what skin in the game do they have?
Oh, skin in the game. Yeah. So they do pay rent. They do pay rent. And now it'd be a low barrier rent, but they do pay
rent. And where are they getting that money if they're homeless?
So either by working, or most of them because they do have disabilities.
Yeah.
So a chronically homeless person would be an unaccompanied male or female that's been living on the street for at least 12 months with a definable disability. So,
yeah.
You know, they would have either physical or mental disability, and most of them would qualify for some kind of benefit to help them pay for rent. Also, we want to have dignified work opportunities in the village for them to be able to earn and pay their own. And we believe that that's part of regaining dignity. You know, self-esteem comes from, you know, earning your own keep and paying your own bills.
Yeah.
And when you just tell someone to sit down and you have no cards in the game whatsoever, that doesn't do anything to help restore their dignity. We
yes.
feel like that they do have to have, as you say, skin in the game.
So there's going to have to be a lot of construction of homes and infrastructure and obviously a lot that's going to go into this. This will all be through fundraising, or where is the money going to come?
Well, initially we've got, you know, we do have a good bit of land and we could use some of that for, you know, phase one construction. So the initial push of funding, we've got some resources as an organization to be able to do that because of our benefactor donated this prime real estate. So we'll be able to come out, I think, with a great traction there because of the funding that we already have. But ongoing, Community First has to raise money every year. They operate at a deficit. So they have to have donors come in every year, and we're going to need the same thing, and we'd like to start that now. What I'd really like to do is challenge the business community to come forward. You know, in the village, we're going to need a grocery store, a hair care center, a library, and a little convenience store, and different, you know, all these different facilities. As I see it, as a business owner, I want to challenge the business community to come forward and be part of the solution. We know that homelessness is a community-wide issue, and it's going to take community-wide involvement to solve that issue. And so I know that, you know, as a business owner, I see the problem on the street, and I realize something needs to be done about it. If I can take some of my resources and contribute to something like this, which I have personally, and be able to help individuals transform their lives and therefore transform the local community at the same time, it's going to make my world better as a business owner in that community.
Yeah, so you'd like to see some of these businesses that will invest in this project, put their stores in, maybe even hire some of these people? Would some of them be possibly?
Yeah, I'd love to see. Like, if we had a grocery store operator, we're going to need a small grocery store for folks to shop at. We're going to have a big pond on site, and I'd love to have a catch and release pond for, and we want to draw in the local community, you know, the families in the surrounding community. If you look at Community First, they have a movie theater and they show movies every Friday night. And they have two property lines where they have traditional single family homes in adjacent properties. they come and watch movies every Friday night with them and do other things. So we want to do that same thing, you know, challenge the local community to get involved with us. And so, yeah, I think business owners could do that, start a small concept. If you're, let's say you're a grocery store operator, start a small concept and you know, commit to personnel that would go through specialty training and that kind of thing for to be able to deal with a troubled population.
Yeah, quite a project, and it's very ambitious, like I said at the beginning, and quite exciting that it's really still at the embryonic stage. And so as we close out, just another minute or minute and a half remaining, Pete Moggins, President, CEO, Founder, Community Forever Village, communityforever.org. Those listening right now, what do you need? How do they get a hold of you? And what are the next action steps? What
are you looking for? Well, communityforever.org, if you'll go to our site, you can donate right on our site if you'd like to give financially. And we need funding right now. We got to pay for engineers and consultants and architects and all the rest of it in order to get through with the zoning change. They can contact us directly through, there's a button on there for volunteering, and you know, that would come directly to us, and we will contact you to see how you can get involved. If you're a business owner and you want to talk about the possibilities of how you could either contribute or get involved with a collaborative venture of some sort, I'd love to talk to you personally. You can contact us through the website, and I'll reach out myself to do that.
All right. I know we still left a lot to be discussed, and hopefully it won't be another year before we have an right. update with you. Maybe we can do another one here in a few months at the beginning of the year and talk about where it's going. Communityforever.org is the website. And again, Pete Moggins is president, CEO, and founders. And of course, pray for them. This is really going to be a big blessing to many people in the homeless community. I think most of us have no idea what it's like to live, even one night under a bridge. I certainly don't. Well, thanks, Pete. Appreciate it. Also, Gretchen, your wonderful wife, for her support of this project as well as a board member. This has been the interview of the week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. If you have ideas for future interviews, let me know. You can just email me directly, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. God bless you. Thanks for listening.
Want to empower and enhance your career opportunities? Kickstart the new year with St. Jude Career Alliance at a faith-based job search workshop. The job search workshop will take place on Saturday, January 24th from 8:45 a.m. to 3 p.m. at St. Jude Catholic Church in Allen. Let faith empower your career pursuits and lead you towards a more purposeful future. Registration is required. For more information or to register, visit the St. Jude Career Alliance website at stjudecareeralliance.com.
Thanks for joining us for the North Texas Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network, both on 910 a.m. in the Dallas area and also 1140 a.m. KCPP, our news station out in Cleburne, serving much of the Fort Worth Diocese. And this is an opportunity for us to introduce you to really cool things going on in the local Catholic world. And I always end these broadcasts by saying, hey, if you have any suggestions for future interviews, email me, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. And a few weeks ago, I got an email from a young lady named Shelby Lopez, and she said that she's friends with one of our former interns, Natalie Potoski, and she and her husband, Jared, are continued to listen to Catholic Radio and support Catholic Radio, and she's friends with Natalie, and she said, Natalie suggested I get in touch with you and see if we can do an interview. And what Shelby Lopez did was she started a Kickstarter campaign that now has completed and raised $12,000 successfully as of earlier this month for an interactive children's rosary book set. Okay, that's a mouthful. And so the Kickstarter campaign is over. They raised the $12,000 and it closed on October 8th. But now she is in the marketing and explaining what this is all about. It's geared towards toddlers. And so I thought, wow, what a great idea. So Shelby, welcome. And I will say that Shelby and her husband Umberto are parishioners at St. Anne's, St. Capelle, and they are proud parents of four young children, six and under, the youngest being 8 months and the oldest 6 years. And so they're right in that age category. So anyways, thanks for coming in. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dave. Yeah, so we had had our first child back in 2019, and shortly after she was born, I had kind of thought about, okay, I want to share my faith with my child and my love for the Virgin Mary. and kind of trying to figure out how do I share that with my kids. You know, they're obviously not, when they're just babies, they're trying to just grow in the faith, and they just want to play. They just, everything up through, you know, really early, even early elementary school is just trying to figure out how to teach them through a way that they're going to understand. Yeah. And so my initial kind of beginnings of this board book was creating a fabric book in that they could interact with, you know, buttons and zippers and little dolls and all that kind of thing. And friends really liked the concept, but there was going to be no way that I could share something that you have to spend a significant amount of time sewing and embroidering with them. Yeah. And so it kind of got me thinking, how can I adapt this to that so that it could be mass produced, so that we could share the Blessed Mary with lots of people.
Yeah.
And so I had talked with different friends about how do you get your kids interested in praying the rosary? And so there were a lot of different ideas. Stuff ranged from, okay, we use marshmallows for each Hail Mary.
I like that.
Once they say it, they get to eat a marshmallow. And a lot of food stuff. Another family had said they always did a family rosary every night. And if you were awake at the end, you got ice cream. and so it's like, okay, so you kind of want to make it something that they are looking forward to. But it was kind of at the end. And I thought, what if we could have something during the rosary that they enjoyed and could engage with? And so kind of from there, I started looking back at my studies in college where I had studied child development and play therapy. And how can I kind of merge that science world of child development? What are children doing? What's going on in their minds? And how can we connect that to the faith? And so kind of using that sort of play therapy concept along with the tenets of St. John Bosco, who he really, in his work with children, focused a lot on how can I engage these kids? And so when he told Bible stories, he tried to make it as fun and dramatic as possible and really get them roped in. And there's stories that children would beg him to tell them more Bible stories. And so I wanted to do something like that, right? How can I merge these kind of two worlds together? And so I started by writing, I kind of finished my one book for my daughter that I, you know, hand sewed and then moved on to how can I make a regular book? So wrote short poems to kind of summarize each of the mysteries and then used a specific type of meter where you can sing it to different songs that most people would know, ranging anywhere from A Little Town of Bethlehem to even Yankee Doodle. and so lots of different things that you could sing that to your child, help them kind of remember what is this mystery about, kind of starting there. And then because it's a board book, it's made with kind of that thick cardboard. It has a matte finish, so it's kind of smooth, and you can play with the beads that are on there. And so I have a list within the book of, if you don't exactly know, okay, how can I make this more interactive? Here's a list of suggestions, but ranging anywhere from you can use Play-Doh and have your child kind of develop those fine motor skills in their hands, roll it into balls. Every Hail Mary, press it down. And then within the images themselves, I worked extensively with this award-winning Catholic artist over in Spain, Sara Barguena-Gafo. And she created these really detailed and charming images that I had her put search and find items within the image. And so lots of both kind of religiously symbolic, but also just fun animals, things like that, stuff for kids to find inside of the images. So as you're working through the rosary, you have all these different interactive elements that kids can play with. And it makes it so that it's not just playtime, it's prayer time in a way that kids enjoy and can be engaged and invested in. And so that's kind of what it all came to.
So how do you separate the different mysteries, the decades? How does, is each decade have its own picture, you know, like the Assumption of the Blessed Mother, there'd be something there.
Absolutely.
Okay. And each book would be a set of mysteries, or is it all together, or how is it, you know, organized?
That's a great question. Yeah. So it is a set of four books. Okay. So it's a collection, and then each one is for the whole set of mysteries.
Okay.
So Joyful, Luminous, Sorrowful, and Glorious. Each one has its own book. And then each page, each spread, right? So one side is the poem and the beads, and then the other side is that image with search and find items within it. And so as you turn, that's a new decade. So kind of you can set it up different ways. I made it so that you could put blueberries on each one and then finish off the blueberries, turn the page for the next decade.
Marshmallows.
Yes, marshmallows too.
So it sounds like there's no like one way to use this.
Right.
That there allows some flexibility and creativity with the parents. Do you give suggestions, or do you just let the parents kind of figure it out on their own about how they're going
to
do this?
Yeah, so I definitely didn't want parents to kind of have to grasp at different things. How can we figure this out? So there's multiple pages in there kind of explaining. As you open the book, the very first page that you're going to see once you open it is, how do you use these beads?
Mm-hmm.
And it has a whole page with, here's some different ways that you can use it. Here's stuff you might have at home, stuff that's simple. You don't have to go out and buy new stuff. Simple and cheap ways where you can have your child really use each bead. Because at a young age, you know, 3, 5, 6, they're not able really to meditate yet. They have to learn that. And so this is kind of that introductory step. Here is how I want you to focus on these beads, and you can, you know, use your Play-Doh and mold it into a shape as we're praying this prayer. For every two beads, there's one item that you can look for in this image. And because they're looking for different kind of hidden items, they're really focusing on what is going on in this picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're looking at the baptism of Jesus and, okay, what's happening here? And so it kind of opens the door for the parent to ask questions. But as far as the interactive type elements, I really wanted to have that clear to the parent. And then I had mentioned a couple of songs to you earlier. On the back cover of each one, I have different types of songs, more geared to whatever that mystery is. So for the Joyful Mysteries, it has more Christmas-oriented songs. For the Sorrowful, it's more somber type songs.
Mm-hmm.
But all the songs are songs that people would kind of know, popular tunes and things, and the poems match that same meter to the song.
So talk about the idea to do the Kickstarter campaign. I know you started it on the Blessed Mother's birthday, September 8th, and then you ended it around the Feast of the Holy Rosary. So there was that's pretty short window. $12,000 is a lot of money to raise. How did you come up with that amount, and how did you get the word out? Because it was successful, and clearly people responded, but that's a lot of money to raise. So tell us why you thought about going that route, and how did you find the people to support it?
Absolutely. So I knew that just to get people interested and to sell this book, I was going to need people already interested. So I felt that a crowdfunding campaign like Kickstarter was going to be the best way to both garner interest. Is this something that, you know, hundreds of families would want? Because when you're printing a board book, you have to print it by the hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a big enough audience for this, kind of? And so it was a way both to garner interest and to actually raise the money for it. The $12,000 is a combination of the commission for the artist, paying her, and then also printing those books. Because board books are really thick kind of cardboard, have a special coating on them, they're quite a lot more expensive than printing kind of your standard book.
Yeah.
It was important to me to have that, though, because these are for little kids, and kids are really rough on books. They like to chew on them. They like to rip them. They like to scratch them. And especially because I wanted kids to be able to really play with that book and engage with it in a meaningful way, I felt that having that extra investment of cost, it was gonna be quite a few thousands of dollars. And
yeah.
So between those two, I really made very little off of it. Most of it went towards the funding of it, because at the heart of it, this was a passion project, and I just wanted to get it out there to families.
Now, you know, when you have something like this, you always want to have a test audience to see how it goes over. And I think you have one under your own roof, right?
Yes.
Did you, other than the your own four children, that kind of, you know, several of them at least fall into that category perfectly, were you able to test it with any other families or anybody give you any feedback?
Yeah. So I was able to digitally send it to different people. The woman who did my graphic lettering, hand lettering, sorry, my graphic designer for the covers, she also has four little kids. And so I had sent that over to her, kind of, how can you kind of give me some times? How long were your kids looking at this? Were they interested? Were you able to successfully pray a decade or two with them? And they really enjoyed it a lot. I think the search and find feature was kind of the favorite. Just because finding all those hidden images, everybody likes a, you know, Where's Waldo type situation.
Yeah.
And so doing that within those, I think, kind of is the best part of it. But yeah, I was able to test it out and then sent it to some different people, kind of more well-known in the Catholic world, and asked them, how do you want to use this? How do you think this could work for your family? And just a lot of positive feedback.
Yeah, and I guess the goal being that these young kids are like, Mom and Dad, is it time for the rosary?
Yes.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, most kids, and you kind of hinted at this earlier, are bored by the rosary. I mean, I know, we pray the rosary every night, and it's not always, you know, oh, is it time for the rosary?
Right.
I mean, it's been a struggle, but you just kind of get into the habit. But the easier you make it on the kids and the more they enjoy it, the better. Shelby Lopez is my guest. She is from St. Anne Capel with her husband Umberto and their four kids ranging from 6 years to 8 months at the time of this recording. And she has come up with Pray and Play the Rosary. That's the official name of it, right?
Yes.
And great timing, because, you know, we're coming up on the holiday season. I mentioned this would be a great, you know, Christmas gift or New Year's gift, and as we, you know, I don't know, I think the timing is awesome for it. Do you have a price in mind of how much you're going to charge yet?
Yeah, so still kind of working out the details on the retail price, but I believe that we're going to market at about $35 a set. That's for all four of those books in a collection. Mm-hmm. One thing with it being a Christmas gift, because this fundraising completed at the beginning of the month, was for the very first printing. When you place an order like that, you kind of go into a wait line, and then you wait about 6 to 8 weeks for production. So it's uncertain exactly the timeline.
Yeah.
It's possible that I may have it in time for Christmas, but it's more likely that it would be like an Easter present for next year in 2026. Or you could hold on to it and wait till next Christmas as well. But
those Christmases keep coming around, don't they?
But yeah, I don't know exactly how long the printing and production will take. So certain on that one.
You can always say, hey, we got a gift for you, but we don't have it yet. We'll have it, you know, even something like the Epiphany, maybe, you know, there's always something else around the corner, you know,
always
January 6th.
Coming up, yeah.
So this is really good news. And if people want to find out about it, I think you told me before we started, they can go to Kickstarter.com and just put in the word rosary, or maybe your last name, Lopez, just any kind of search, and they'll find it on the Kickstarter campaign. Is
that's
that right?
Yeah. If you go to Kickstarter.com and type in the word rosary or Catholic, unfortunately, there's not a huge amount of people doing those types of fundraisers.
I wish that wasn't the case.
It's going to show up quickly. You'll be able to find it in those search results pretty fast. But yeah, it's under Pray and Play the Rosary. So anything that's kind of one of those buzzwords, you can type it in and that'll show up there.
Yeah. Have you always had an interest in these kind of like craft projects? And maybe this is part of your homeschooling that, I don't know, my experience, homeschooling students tend to be very, very creative. And not to say that other students aren't, but it seems to be part of it. And and a follow-up question, do you have anything else, you know, like in your mind that my next project is going to be this? Has that already popped in your mind?
Yes. So I have always, for my whole life, been very artistic, crafty, interested in kind of making things, making beautiful things. So this definitely is up my alley. People would think, oh, Shelby Lopez, she would do something like this. Mm-hmm. So this is definitely kind of something I would do and something I'm really grateful to have been able to do. It obviously raising $12,000 involves lots and lots of people. And so, yeah, just really grateful for the way that the Catholic community came together to support me in this dream project. But yeah, I've created lots of things like that along the way. I've taught preschool Bible classes to Catholic kiddos, kind of making different ways of playing and learning about different Bible stories. And so this kind of lined up with it. Part of the reason I did write it actually was we do a Charlotte Mason Catholic type homeschool program where at the beginning of your fall semester, you're learning about all the different mysteries of the rosary. And so I thought this would be a great way to teach my kindergartner about the rosary is to use this book because of the art style. It's a really, really lovely, rich, charming style. And so that I felt was more engaging with my child than maybe some like black and whites that you might find on Google or whatever. Stuff you're going to find in older books. And so I actually created that partly for my little ones so that family rosary would be less of a struggle, less of a chore, something that they were happy to sit down and do this versus jumping on the couch, hitting each other with rosaries, things like that.
That certainly, well, sounds like you've peeked into the Palmer household. And that's certainly been the case for us. And I'm just thinking, from a marketing standpoint, it'd be so great to get this into some of the Catholic bookstores. Unfortunately, we don't have as many Catholic bookstores as we did even 10 years ago, but like Little Angels Catholic Store in Capel, which do you know the folks there?
I do, yeah.
Greg and Elva?
Yeah, I called them up a few weeks back, and they were interested in having this book once it was printed. So in progress and plan to sell there as well as anyone else I can connect with. One thing I had forgotten to address earlier, you were asking about a next project.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, probably a few years down the road, once this particular set is a little bit more set into place, I would love to write about the Doctors of the Church. I feel that right now there is just not a lot out there as far as even adult books, but especially kids books. There's a lot of focus on the female Doctors of the Church because there's only four of them right now, but all the other ones, it's really hard to find stuff. And so I would love to do some kind of a series on like a kid level introduction to the Doctors of the Church. Yeah. As I've done a little bit of research looking into them, they just have done so much for us and for our faith and for our community as the entire Catholic Church. But we don't know a lot about them.
And they're so diverse. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a great devotion to St. Thomas Aquinas. I also love St. Thérèse of Lisieux. Mm-hmm. Both doctors of the church, but very, very different people.
Absolutely.
I mean, both very holy. And of course, that would be a really interesting project because different kids or people that, you know, will maybe identify with different traits. And now we've got a new one in St. John Henry Cardinal Newman that's just been declared a doctor of the church. So that is awful cool. Shelby Lopez is my guest. We are down to our last few minutes here. And I invite you to go to Kickstarter.com and put in rosary or Catholic or else pray and play the rosary. I'm sure it'll pop up real quickly if you do that. And look at this project that she has put together. It's sold, you said about $35 is probably going to be the price. Mm-hmm. You buy them all together. You can't do a la carte or it's kind of like a box set.
There is a la carte option on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Eventually, it will just be a box set. You won't be able to buy them a la carte. But right now, you can actually. So there's a late pledge enabled and you can go on there and you can order them a la carte or all together as a four set.
Yeah. You mentioned about, you know, I think you said the Charlotte Mason approach and teaching your kids the rosary. Clearly, the love for the Blessed Mother was instilled in you. Have you always had the love for the Blessed Mother? Was there a particular thing that maybe your parents did in homeschooling or the way they, how did you catch that love?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think we prayed a family rosary growing up and then definitely just our faith was integrated within our homeschool. We were always learning about the catechism and the saints and different things like that. And so there was definitely like this is what our family does. This is part of who we are. The Blessed Mother is your mother too. And, you know, if you need to have a mom in your life, which all of us do. The Blessed Mother is the best, the best option you got. There is no one better. And so I think especially though, as I was kind of in middle school and early high school, growing up in the Bible Belt, I was very challenged about Mary and about my Catholic faith and the homeschool world. There's a lot of Catholics and there's also a lot of anti-Catholic Protestants. And so I definitely would get challenged on that. And me being somebody who is not going to go down without a fight, I literally spent probably over 100 hours doing apologetics and understanding and researching. And the more that I researched, the more that it was evident that this is something wonderful and lovely. And Blessed Mother was definitely a big part of that. I learned a lot about, you know, her being the Queen Gebira from the Old Testament and all these different ways that she is a type, the Ark of the Covenant, things like that. And so it was, you know, how can I really honor her in a way? And I think it's been incredible to be able to do this as my own way of honoring her.
And I think a lot of the Protestants are coming around on Blessed Mother. You might have seen this Charlie Kirk video, God rest his soul, that where he was encouraging Protestants to give more reverence to the Blessed Mother and to venerate her. And he's saying that as a Protestant. Who I think many people thought he was on his way into the Catholic Church, but we're not sure. But anyways, Shelby, great idea. I'm so glad you got in touch with us. And we just are down to the last couple of minutes here. Let's just recap what this is for people who are just tuning in, how they can get it, whether it be for Christmas or Easter or next Christmas or what have you. It's not going anywhere, right? It's a Kickstarter.com project. Pray and play the Rosary. It's geared towards toddlers. And what else do you want people to know as we close out here?
Absolutely. So it is a board book set geared from anywhere from toddler to about kindergarten age to teach your child about the Rosary in a way that is engaging and interactive. It really focuses on using play to pray. And so because play is the work of the child, according to many child therapists, this is the way that kind of you can integrate that ora et labora, pray and work, with your child for your family rosary. It's something that you can just open up for your kid. It has all these different ideas already embedded, ways to make the rosary interactive for your child without distracting from the rosary. Kind of made it as an introduction to devotion to Our Lady for the little young kids who aren't good at meditative prayer yet, a way for them to learn that.
Yeah, and I love how, you know, you're gearing it towards these young kids, because I know sometimes if the parents have this big reversion and they start educating their kids when they're like in college or high school, not to say it's too late. I mean, it's never too late, but it's so good to get in early, as clearly you and Umberto are doing. And we encourage everybody to do the same. And this would be a good resource to do just that. Kickstarter.com, put in Rosary or Catholic or Pray and Play the Rosary or Shelby Lopez or something like that, and you'll find it. And please support great efforts like this. We're out of time, but Shelby, thank you for coming in. Also want to thank Natalie and Jared for their friendship with the Lopezes, and also just they're awesome people as well. Hopefully they're listening to this and realize that they're part of having this interview happen. This has been the Interview of the Week. Thank you to Teresita for running the board, and thank you for listening. And again, I'll say what I said at the beginning. If you have ideas for future interviews, email me, like Shelby did, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. And we'd love to talk about your project or your news, anything that's local and Catholic. It's good for this show. Thanks and God bless. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks for joining us for this week's KATH 910 AM Interview of the Week. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Catholic news and information pertinent to North Texas Catholics. Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth, and North Texas. Catholic radio for your soul on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.
Spend more time with the Apostle of